Good morning. And I mean that sincerely. It is a good morning. And so my chief directive with you in the time that we have is to solidify that and to look at all of the things that might be in the way of you believing that. There was a gentleman by the name of Howard Schultz, who was a CEO for Starbucks, and he took several businessmen with him to Israel. And they had an audience with a very prominent rabbi, and they were ushered into his room at this seminary, and they waited for him like 10 minutes. And finally, when he came in, they were unprepared for what they saw, because no one told him that this rabbi, Rabbi Finkter, had advanced staged Parkinson's. And so as this rabbi came in and was getting positioned, they, in their embarrassment or not knowing what to do or how to handle it, kept looking away. And he sat down, the rabbi, in this conference table, and he looked at all of them, and to the best of his ability, he pounded on that table, and he said, "Look at me. Look at me. All you fancy businessmen from America, I want to ask you a question." And the question is, what was the major lesson from the Holocaust? And they all looked at one another nervously, and one of them said, "Always remember, never forget." And he goes, "No, no." He goes, "Let me remind you that families were ushered into railroad cars. They were lied to that they were going to be going to farming camps or work camps." And he goes, "By the time that the trains arrived in the station, they began to separate the families, the mothers from the children, the husbands from the wives, and they were ushered into their respective bunkers. And they were given one blanket per five people." And he goes, "You know why they were given one blanket for five people? Because they knew that if they could break the humanity of those people, that they would be able to rule them better. And so it was up to the person who was assigned the blanket as they were going into their bunkers to sleep to make a decision. And that decision was to keep the blanket for themselves or to share the blanket." And the rabbi looked at these American businessmen and he said, "My message to you and the message that I want you to take back to America is you must learn to share the blanket. You must learn to share the blanket." When I heard that, and this CEO shared that at a commencement speech, I thought of all of the metaphors that the blanket represents, not just a physical blanket, but the way in which we are here to share with one another. And the most optimum thing that you and I can share, the most optimum blanket that there is consciousness. Consciousness precedes everything in the material. What you have within your own capacity of mind can literally change the landscape and the quality of not just your life, but the ripple effect of those around you. Do you understand that? You know that that's what metaphysics is all about, that if we share the blanket of consciousness undeniably, unwaveringly, then regardless of what happens in the world of effect, nothing can stand at the effect of that light. Nothing can withstand or diffuse the effectiveness of that light. And so I want to give you a really quick metaphysical lesson, because I think it's important for us to always be reminded of this. For some of you, this is going to be new information, and for some of you, you're going to go, "Okay, I understand, and I'm not quite there yet." And for some of you, you're going to go, "Okay, I get it." Let me explain who you are and where you're from. One of the big tenets of New Thought, of metaphysics, is the fact that we are one, that God is not some deity in the sky, that what you and I are made of are all of the virtues, all of the qualities, all of the energetic vibrations of that which is God. So God is everything, in all, as all, through all. It is the backbone of all of life, and that includes your backbone as well. And to the degree that we own that, not just own it conceptually, but own it in practice, is the degree that our lives truly do begin to change. And so this idea then that there is only one mind, simply means that in the realm, we'll talk quantum language for a moment, in the realm of the field, which is infinite, is everything. All solution, every answer to every prayer, everything that will feed the hunger that is individually burning inside of us is there in that field. It's already there. So some of our greatest, wisest sages put it this way: creation is finished. You and I then create nothing. What we do is we access from the field of infinite potentiality all that has ever been created. Think about that for a moment. Some of you are going, phew. But I want you to ponder that. It's not that when we pray that the thing that we pray for has to be created from scratch. It's that it's already there. When the Wright brothers were at the final stages of trying to get this big piece of machinery to be able to fly, they were not the only ones in the world who were racing to the finish line to be called the first people of aviation. There were many people because there were a collective who were accessing from the field the formula, the mechanics, the equations, the mathematics, everything that was going to require that to be a success. It was already in the field. When Moses was leading the Israelites through the desert, the way was already there. Maybe that's why the GPS system wasn't invented back then yet, because consciousness in and of itself was not ready for that. But you see, we're in a celestial speed-up, which simply means that everything for the advancement of our humanity is already there, and it's being downloaded and accessed at a rapid pace. And that means that for you and I, the solutions that we hunger for, it's there already. And so I want to show you the difference between the word infinity and expansiveness. Because I had a student back in Atlanta go, well, we live in an expansive universe. And in my professorial smugness, I said, well, that's not actually correct. We live in an infinite universe. For something to be expansive, it means that it has to have been measured by one level of measurement and then advanced to another. If we're talking about the infinite nature of the universe, you can't measure that which is infinite. You and I can only access that. So we are expansive. And to the degree that you take this life and you start to access all of that which is in the realm of the infinite, is the degree by which we are living on purpose. So do you understand? It's already there. You and I are not actually creating anything. We're activating and accessing that which is already created. For minds like mine, that keeps me up at night because that's exciting. So it takes terms like you are infinite potentiality, and it brings meaning to them. It brings the concept down to a level where you and I can begin to understand. So if you're sitting there this morning in your anxiety or in your depression or in your worry, I want you to pause just for a moment in that state and understand what you are and what you have the power through consciousness to be able to do. You see, there is nothing in the realm of effect that can dampen that. There is nothing in the realm of effect that is far more powerful than consciousness. And how many times has that been proven in humanity for hundreds and hundreds of years? That when the odds look so impenetrable, the mind of that which believed and the mind that accessed that which was in the field of the infinite could move mountains. And those people weren't special people. Those are people just like you and I. We must remember that. We must remember that. One of the great things that causes our pain, in fact, I was awakened one night with this thought, and that was the source of all of our pain, is our distrust in the divine. The source of all of our pain, the genesis, the origin of all of our pain, is a distrust in the divine. So think about that. We say we are believers. We say that we subscribe to this spiritual ideology. But how many of us are eating and drinking and feeding from that knowledge on a daily basis? We do so when things are great, but boy, when there's maybe something happening in our present world, we sort of lose it, which is fine. But are we then ultimately distrusting in the process of what we just talked about? So the source of our pain is this distrust in the divine. Now, here's one of the incomplete components of this teaching. You heard it from me, so if you don't like that, blame me. Don't blame the teaching. And that is, when we teach things like affirmation and we teach of the idea of turning away from the condition, that is very true, because words and feeling culminated together do bring about manifestation. But the thing that we skip over, or the spiritual bypass, is our humanity. And in our humanity, we have this full spectrum of feeling and emotion. Feeling is that little spot within us that is activated by stimulus. And then as that feeling flows through us, then it moves into the realm of emotion, so we emote it. So when something sparks happiness within us, it then flows into that point and we laugh. Sometimes we laugh so much that we snort Coke out of our nose because we're caught on surprise and we're just giggling, because you and I have no resistance to happiness. You understand? One time when I was so filled with anger, and I was a beginning minister, and I felt like such a hypocrite because I would have to get up on Sundays and I would talk about love and light, and I was so enraged by what somebody had done to me. You know, the kind of rage that you want them to be skinned alive live on CNN, that kind of rage. I mean, it was big. And I couldn't find congruency. I couldn't find anything applicable to what I was feeling, because I was taking this spiritual message and I was wanting to bypass it. I wasn't wanting to do the work. And when this person, this very wise person, was manifested for me, he gave me the space, the container, to just get it all out. And then after it was all out, he asked me one simple question. And it was, why do you think that happiness doesn't last? And I tried to give him a really great spiritual answer. You know, the Rolodex was just running. And I said something textbooky, and he just looked at me and said, no. He said, happiness doesn't last because you and I don't have resistance to happiness. And I was like, what are you talking about, Willis? I don't know. I don't get it. What? He said, happiness doesn't last because you and I don't have any resistance to happiness. Meaning, the spark, the feeling of happiness gets ignited. It moves through. We emote it without resistance, and then it goes in and it goes out, just like it's supposed to. No one's happy 100% of the time. It's very much like an ocean wave. The tide comes in and the tide comes out. And so because you and I don't have any resistance to it, we feel that feeling fully. And there is a completion to it. There is a resolve. Now, that's not to say that a millisecond after that, it gets activated again. And so there are ripples, or there are waves of happiness that are not resisted, but are fully allowed. And I go, okay, I got it. And then he followed it up with this question. Why do you think that anger and sorrow and rage and depression, why do you think that those things last? And I said, because we have resistance to it? Yes. What does that mean? All of us in here were taught that to be spiritual meant that we couldn't feel that way. We were taught that good little boys or good little girls or don't act out like that. We were taught that it was better to be seen and not heard. And we cultivate all of these emotions and these thoughts and these themes and these beliefs around some feelings are good and some feelings are bad. When, if everything is all God, then that spectrum of emotion is there for a reason for our humanity to be able to process and be more in alignment with our spirituality. But in the process of that, if I'm labeling certain things wrong, then here's what happens. Same process, something sparks the anger. It starts to travel where it gets to the realm of emoting, and I do what? That's not good. You're a minister. You can't feel that way. You're this, you're that, whatever you want to label it. And so we block it, and it doesn't become like the ocean wave. It's just one end of that spectrum. And he said to me, what do you think happens to that? If everything is energy, then what that is just energy then that's unprocessed within the human frame. Now, I want you to think about how many decades you might have been labeling a particular feeling as bad, and how many times you have blocked that, and then how many of us have been in that space where it can't contain it any longer, so we do what? We explode inappropriately, and it has nothing to do with what it was that was right in front of us. Because our level of emotionality lacks a beautiful sense of intelligence and understanding. And so when we talk about the fact that it's all mind, then it means that this spectrum of emotion and this feeling and this processing is very much there for you and I to be able to evolve. It's a part of our evolution. In this idea of mind, there are two aspects, which I always teach. One is objective, which means that that's the thing where every single day I'm making decisions. I make decisions of what I'm going to eat, what I'm going to wear, how I'm going to go, what time I'm going to leave to get to work. Those are all things that are done objectively in all of those particular five sense realms. But there's another part of mind that's called the subjective or the subconscious. Metaphysics teaches us that that field of mind is the warehouse of all thought. All thought. Not just your thought, but the thought of every sentient being since the dawn of thought. And so when we say that you have access to infinite potentiality, when we say that your mind is the mind of Einstein, it means that the thoughts of Einstein or of any great thinker is held in that universal field of subjectivity. So every time you think that, yes, I can, it travels from the objective to the subjective, where it collects with all of the historical thoughts of any other sentient being that said, I can. The same process holds true for every single time we say, I can't. It travels from the realm of objective into subjective, and it aligns itself, it collects itself with all of the historical thought where someone thought that they were inadequate and not enough. And then the last piece of that traveling then becomes form. That's called the creative process. And no one governs your creative process but you. So in the midst of whatever world of effect, nothing robs us of our ability to channel and use consciousness. Do you see? And so this idea of share the blanket is begin to share your ripple of consciousness with the world. And at the same time, be able to feel your feelings. I know that sounds really paradoxical, but the operative word and one of my favorite words in our language is the word and. I get to know that I am a vessel of infinite potentiality and I'm angry. And you know what's so beautiful about that? Is that then I can use my anger and know that it has a shelf life. Rather than ruling my life for decades and creating some embittered sense of belief, I can feel it, I can process it, I can articulate what my boundaries are or whatever it is that I'm doing, and then, just like the ocean wave, it goes back. Have you ever been around somebody that has a healthy emotional spectrum of their feelings? So their anger looks something like this. Wow, don't do that again. I don't like that. That doesn't work for me. And if you won't respect this boundary, then we're going to have to make some changes here. Rather than, oh my God, I can't stand you. Right? Same goes with sorrow. When people are able to fully feel their emotions, you know, that's one of the things that's wrong with the psyche of the masculine within our world, is that we have suppressed this idea that to show vulnerability and sorrow is weak, when in actuality, it's in perfect alignment with the creative process. How beautiful it is to be able to be with individuals who have a beautiful equanimity, a sense of poise, and a sense of balance with their ability to be able to process all of that. And so as we begin to look at these things of sharing the blanket, meaning sharing consciousness, and operative word, and working on ourselves subjectively to let these feelings out, we have some things to look at. We have some incompletion to look at. There's a really great guy. He came to our center in Atlanta because we did an event around his book, and his name is Panache Desai. If you watch Oprah's Super Soul Sunday, he's been on there before. He's from India, and he's just one of the most amazing human beings, and he came, and in one of his books, he talks about this emotional intelligence, and he talks about the unexpressed emotion and feeling. And he said, one of the troubling things about that is that if we don't do this work, we end up thinking that this doesn't work, meaning spirituality doesn't work, because we haven't been able to unearth the wound or the theme in order to let it breathe. And so people would get up and they would share their story, and everybody's story has some victimization to it. And depending upon how great your storytelling is, it's really juicy. And depending upon how many people you can get to align with the juiciness of that, then we keep telling that story. And so one woman stood up at our event and he said, okay, what I want you to do is I want you to stand in front of all these people and I want you to declare, I am a victim. And she went, no, I'm not going to do that. And he goes, why not? And she spouted off what we all can spout off. Whatever you put after the words I am becomes your reality. And he goes, true. However, if you don't claim this subjectively inside of you, if you don't bring this out in the open, I'm not saying it's the definitive of who you are, but I want you to own that. And she couldn't do it. Someone else got up and talked about how she detests liars. And he goes, well, have you ever thought of the phrase, you spot it, you got it? Meaning, we wouldn't be so activated by lying if we hadn't worked through our own process of lying. So he said, I want you to stand up in front of everybody and say, I am a liar. And she went along. I am a liar. And then about 2 minutes into it, she started to laugh because she saw how ridiculous her trigger was, because she hadn't healed or looked at her own triggering. And so part of our emotional intelligence is beginning to understand that the very things that we are condemning, we are. And I know this isn't new information. You know, some people call it shadow work. But as we begin to explore this, we do so with that operative word, and. Why do you think the recovery program is so successful, particularly steps 4 and 5. What are steps 4 and 5? Create a moral inventory. And then you go and you find someone and you confess that. Catholics had something with confession. Confession was actually good for the soul. Because if we don't do that, we then go to this class or we then hear this speaker teach us about how we have to affirm these things, and yet what we're doing is we're negating the very thing that's coming out of our mouth because we haven't completed the process. And so when I teach affirmative prayer, which is a part of all of metaphysics, that we're praying affirmatively, we're making these declarative statements, I don't even begin that until I work on some of the emotional stuff. Because you see, faith, the depths of faith, is dependent upon the mastery of our humanity. The depths of our faith is dependent upon the mastery within our human skill set in order for the divinity to be able to shine through. To the degree that you own that in your humanity, to the degree that I own this in my humanity, is the degree in which that spirituality, the divinity of me, can have a fresh and open and willing space to manifest because I'm not constantly negating it. How many times have we gone to a prosperity workshop and we get all pumped up and then it lasts for 3 days and then we're like right back to the same position again and we're looking for the next prosperity workshop to sign up for? When what we really haven't confessed or created a moral inventory is that we have an allegiance to lack, that we actually believe in lack. And to the degree that I do the work about the belief in lack is the degree in which that which is prosperity can actually begin to open up and show itself to me. To the degree that I own my victim story is the degree in which my freedom and my resilience can finally find a space to be able to operate. To the degree that I own that I have lied is the degree in which truth can find fertile ground to be able to process itself through me. And that's what makes the understanding of our humanity so rich. Because you see, if we didn't have collective upset, if we didn't have these chains of events, then we wouldn't have the opportunity to practice what it is that we say that we preach. I want to tell you, your life and your freedoms are only ruled by one thing, and it's consciousness. Consciousness. And I want you to notice inside how you want to argue with that. And own that you want to argue with that. Because that's beautiful if you are aware of the fact that you want to argue with that. Because all of us are looking for wiggle room in the law of cause and effect. I believe in the law of cause and effect, except for this one thing. Except for this. That's where the law doesn't get it right. That, my friend, is spiritual maturity. And you know what? You and I have been called. You are sitting in this room for a reason. I don't believe in accidents. I believe in divine order implicitly. And I believe that you are here because there is something that is calling you to be able to share the blanket in your respective world. And how we wrap that up then is by getting back in touch with gratitude. And when I say gratitude, I mean knee-dropping awe of the way in which life works. There's a story in Scripture, I believe it's in the book of Luke, and back in the day, the worst thing that could happen health-wise to an individual was for them to get leprosy. Because if you were then diagnosed with leprosy, you were sent off to a colony. You couldn't have contact with your family. You couldn't be within a certain parameter of another individual. You had to stay in these particular bounds. And Jesus, I believe he was walking along the border of Samaria or Galilee, and there were these 10 leper men who were way across the road, and they recognized him. And they started to cry out to him, "Lord, have mercy upon me. Lord, have mercy upon me." And Jesus said this really simple thing. He said, "Go, rise, go and see your priest," which simply meant go and rise and mingle now back into humanity because I know that there is a rule that you can't, so by going and doing that, you will discover that you have been made whole. And when they stood up and they got it and they turned and they looked and they saw that all of their lesions and everything had been cleansed, they let out this huge cry of joy and they ran. They ran in the other direction, except for one. One looked, turned back around the source of where this healing had occurred, came and dropped physically to his knees and began to profusely express gratitude to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "Rise, it is your faith that has made you whole. It is your faith that has made you whole." Often we're like the 9 other guys, because we love us some quick, instant gratification. We get just enough relief, and off we go back into our same routine. But that one guy had the wherewithal to stop long enough to go back to the source and to fall on his knees and say, "Thank you, thank you." And when Jesus said, "Rise, your faith, the depths of your faith, your willingness to come and be in awe and in gratitude for what you have gotten has made you whole." Now is the time, and now will always be the time, for you and I to find our respective place within every single day to fall down on our knees in awe at what we have. And I know I don't need to tell you this, but if we continue to focus, talk, and dialogue about "ain't it awful," all that we will replicate then in our world is what? "Ain't it awful." And we will be living in the same world, in the same world that other people who are sharing the blanket, bringing up all of their stuff subjectively, and who are practicing their realm of gratitude, we will be living in the same world as those people who are not letting effect stop them or hinder them in any way. I know you probably didn't want to hear that. But I care about you enough, and I care about this thing called consciousness enough, that I know that if this lands with just a few people, then it's those people, it's that resilience that will never take no for an answer. I want you to be those people. I want you to see implicitly that you were born in this space-time continuum for a particular reason. That you are here this morning because there is something innate inside of you that is fed up. That is fed up with only surface-level faith and the depths of faith that are saying, let me show you what the divine wants to do by means of you. That's where it gets to be truly exciting. That's where you and I then live and dance, cooperate, and exchange with one another in that leading edge sensibility. And every single one of you in here is called to do that. So I want to invite you, as we go into meditation this morning, Ty's going to come up and he's going to lead us in a song that was written by India Ari, a very simple song called "I Am Light." All that is needed and required this morning is for you to find within yourself just a shred of willingness. Everybody willing to open up just a shred of willingness? All right. Close your eyes. I invite you to actually alter your posture. If you would, if your legs are crossed, to uncross them. To position yourself as if you are receiving a gift, because that's exactly what we're doing. We're going to receive the gift that is already there. Just begin to take some deep cleansing breaths.
I am light. 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 I am not the things my family did. I am not the voices in my head. I am not the pieces of the brokenness inside. I am light. I am light. I am light. I am light.
Breathe in and sing that with Ty. I am light.
I am light,
I am light.
I am light, I am light. I am light,
I am
light. I'm not the mistakes that I have made, or any other things that cause me pain. I am not the pieces of the dream I left behind. I am light. I am light. I am light, I'm light. I am light, I'm light. I'm light, I'm light. I am not the color of my eyes. I am not the skin on the outside. I am not the pieces of the dream I left behind. I am light. I am light.
And so as you breathe this morning, I invite you to go to that place inside of you, and it does exist, the place inside of you that has never been violated. That is the divine spot. That is the still small voice. That is the intuitive nature that hungers and craves for our attention. And so as we pivot, as we turn the other cheek to this purity, we now pause long enough for our personal instruction. What is it that I am to do? How do I share the blanket? How do I expand my consciousness and access all of that which is in the field of infinite potentiality? How do I do that? Show me. And in the sincerity of our asking, in the sincerity of our appointment every day to be in awe and in gratitude for the breath that flows through this physical body, we are shown. Sometimes it's only one stair step at a time. And that's enough. And so my prayer, my affirmative prayer this morning is for all of those within this auditorium that there now is a cracking open, a breaking opening, a vulnerability of allowing for every single component of their humanity and their divinity to begin to be intertwined, to understand the value and the necessity of how each of these work together. Divinity needs our humanity. And each of us now are called to share our respective blankets of gratitude, of earthly good, of kindness, and we do so willingly and joyously. And if you are in agreement with me this morning, I'm going to ask you to breathe very, very deeply, allowing yourself to anchor in this truth inside of you, to find in that pure spot that place of knowing that says yes. And if you have done that, and if you are in agreement with this prayer, I invite you to simply say, amen. And so it is.